The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Again, I'm very honored to be with all of you. It was a great day yesterday. It was a great evening. I think we had a tremendous success, and hopefully the tone can get better. Hopefully the tone can get a lot better. And I really believe it begins with the media. We used to call it the press.
Does it begin with you, Mr. President?
I really believe it begins with the media. If you would cover, and it was a very interesting story written in a very good paper recently that talked about the fact that it isn't good what the media is doing, and that I do have the right to fight back because I'm treated very unfairly. So I do fight back, and I'm fighting back not for me. I'm fighting back for the people of this country.
That's President Donald Trump closing out his press conference, his contentious press conference from yesterday, one that went on for almost 90 minutes. And there he was saying that, look, I hope the tone can get better. But you and the media, you've got to take responsibility. And you heard the reporter there fire back at him. How are you going to change? Doesn't it begin with you? Or I guess, does it begin with you? They hide behind the question mark. Or they hide behind, some have said. You heard that a lot in the press conference yesterday. Even as they hurled all of these insults at the president. We'll play a number of clips from that press conference yesterday. I think we'll play some that you probably aren't aware of. I know the most contentious exchanges have gotten quite a lot of publicity. But we'll come to some other ones that I think are quite interesting as well. We have a lot to get to on the show. Also, this year, this week actually marks the World War I centenary, 100 years since the close of World War I. And as I mentioned on yesterday's show, we're going to take some time today, tomorrow, probably Monday as well, to just be reminded of some of that history. Today, in the closing segment of the show, we'll look at the cause of that great war, as it's been called. Well, to begin with, that the wild press conference, there were other things that happened yesterday as well. The firing of Jeff Sessions following the midterms. And anyway, this conference, the president comes out. The very first question, the reporter asked about subpoenas. And then after that, the tax returns. Are those tax returns going to be released? And then I think Jim Acosta, he was maybe third or fourth on the list. And he had the biggest, most contentious exchange with the president. And his first statement was something to the effect that I want to challenge you on calling the caravan an invasion. That was his quote-unquote question. He said, I want to challenge you. And the president simply said, look, I consider it an invasion. And Acosta considers it, I guess, migrants just coming or moving toward America. Lecturing the president. And then saying, aren't you demonizing the immigrants? And then he criticized the president for showing the campaign ad with migrants climbing over the walls. And the president responded by saying, well, that did happen. I mean, they were climbing over the walls. That's true. And then Acosta responded to that by saying, well, that's hundreds of miles away. And then as the president tried to move on, he shifted gears to the Russian investigation. So the investigation, the subpoenas, the tax returns, calling the caravan an invasion, demonizing immigrants. Another reporter followed by saying, why are you pitting Americans against one another? Why are you, the president, causing Americans to fight against each other? He asked that question twice, this reporter. And then he got into the Bob Mueller investigation. There was a point when April Ryan stood up over and again, and the mic was nowhere near her, and she just kept interrupting. And the president kept saying, sit down, sit down. Why are hate crimes on the rise? One of them asked. Are you a moral leader? That was another question. He said at one point, if they're going to investigate me, then we'll investigate them. Two know how to play that game. And that seemed to shock one of the reporters. Well, how can you investigate them? I mean, you're supposed to carry out your responsibilities as president. As if they're really concerned about that. Have you ever made racist remarks? One of them asked. This is the news conference following the midterm elections, 2 years into a presidency. Have you ever made racist remarks? You say you're a nationalist, but some say that means a white nationalist. Listen to this particular exchange. This is from a PBS reporter, clip number 8.
On the campaign trail, you called yourself a nationalist. Some people saw that as emboldening white nationalists. Now people are also saying
that the president... That's such a racist question.
There are some people that say that now the Republican Party is seen as supporting white nationalists because of your rhetoric. What do you make of that?
I don't believe it. I don't know. Why do I have my highest poll numbers ever with African-Americans? Why do I have among the highest poll numbers with African-Americans? I mean, why do I have my highest poll numbers? That's such a racist question.
And, of course, the major media then responds in unison, saying that the problem with that exchange was the president saying it was a racist question. No problem with the PBS host getting up and saying, essentially, that he's a white nationalist. This is PBS, from PBS NewsHour, government-sponsored. That network is government-sponsored, as if America needs one more radical left-wing newsroom that's funded by taxpayers. Funded by U.S. taxpayers. Further on in the press conference, listen to this exchange. This is clip 11.
Michael Cohen recently said you called black voters stupid.
That's false.
Omarosa has accused you of using the N-word, and the rapper Little John has said you called him Uncle Tom. What's your response?
I don't know who Little John is.
So there's answers to all of these questions. He's answered these questions before, but they won't stop. They won't accept his answers. And so they keep badgering him. Racist, white supremacist, white nationalist, Hitler, Nazis. And then all of the corruption, as they see it. The subpoenas, the indictments, the obstruction, the tax evasion, etc., etc. This was that point in the press conference when he told Ms. Ryan to sit down. I mean, you're interrupting. This is clip number 1.
I'm not responding. I'm responding to... Excuse me, I'm not responding to you. I'm talking to this gentleman. Would you please sit down? Would you please sit down? Please, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. President. Now that the House of Representatives
very hostile,
has split.
It's such a hostile media. It's so sad. You ask me about... No, you rudely interrupted him. Go ahead.
She was interrupting constantly, and yet given a hero's welcome on one of the news networks last night, as was Jim Acosta. It's great ratings. I'll come to that more in a second. But it's like he's working with a bunch of school children, rebellious school children, and look at how quickly they go to the race card. It's not like you didn't know this was coming. They've been doing it for going on 3 years. In Great Again, my father writes, many prominent leaders, both black and white, are deliberately fueling racial grievances for their own political gain. These people are using race as a deadly weapon. The problems that will result are far more dangerous than they realize. Yes, indeed, it's just throwing fuel on the fire because half the country believes it. Half the country believes he's a racist and that his followers are like Nazis. Listen to this this next one here. This is, again, President Trump. He talked about the hostility of the media. And here he's talking about the push to impeach and to impeach Kavanaugh, to impeach the vice president. And listen closely to what he says after this, clip 9.
Let's impeach the president, and then we'll impeach the vice president. These people are sick, and you know what? They have to get their bearing. Really, they have to get their bearing. And when you ask about division, they're the ones that cause the division. They cause tremendous division.
And so, like he said in that opening clip we played, he fights back and says, look, there's a sickness here. There's a built-in hostility. And if you want to talk about division, then you better look at yourselves first. My father wrote in that Kavanaugh piece we've been quoting from it the last few days. He said, this is pure bullying and intimidation. Pure bullying and intimidation. I mean, they surrounded Tucker Carlson's house last night, chanting, we know where you live. I think Carlson has like four, maybe three or four girls, little girls, surrounding his house, chanting, we know where you live. It's nonstop, bullying and intimidation. The truth, my father writes, is trampled to the ground, steamrolled by hatred and rage. This is a calamity. We're witnessing a complete breakdown of law and order in this land. He says further, look at the absolute hatred. I've never seen it, anything quite like it. The radical left is sick. The radical left is sick. As the president said, these people are sick. Impeachment, indictment, subpoenas, Nazis, Hitler, white nationalists, white supremacists, racist. There's no end to it. It just goes on and on and on. The radical left is sick, he writes. They do not accept criticism, and they are not sound-minded. As I've been saying, my father points to Ephesians 2, the devil's influence. The devil's the god of this world. You see it. We see it every day. Yesterday I talked about how he's tightening that stranglehold. And if he loses, you can only be sure that he's going to come right back after you. He's not going to give up. Satan isn't. He's not going to give up. He's going to keep attacking. In America Under Attack, this goes back a few years ago, it says every week, it seems, mainstream media and radical Democrats are talking about Republicans being racist. In almost every case, they're lying, and they know they're lying. That is sick. That is sick and satanic to the core. There's a sickness here. Satan's whipping it up. All of this angry emotion. And then the reaction, and it's so predictable, as the press corps returns to their cozy offices and their big expensive studios, they go on and on about what's wrong with Donald Trump, about how he handled himself at that press conference. Listen to this montage, clip 13.
Then obviously suffering from that rebuke at the ballot box, Donald Trump struck out at his enemies today with all his fury.
Well, really, I think that the president was frustrated because reporters were doing what we do best, which is ask questions. The president was, his anger was boiling over there. And I think
I thought it was so Machiavellian today.
I do think they're trying to
to shut us down to some extent.
He was literally pacing back and forth. I thought he might walk off.
It looked to me like a guy who wanted to be seen having a fight with the media.
You mean a street fight? What did you see in his eyes when he's looking at you?
I saw someone who I think was very, very frustrated and very, very angry at the fact
that the president often uses these fights that he picks with the media to distract.
He had just finished yelling at April Ryan.
This is what they want. If they think Jim Acosta is so unfair to them, why did the president call on him? They called on him because they wanted to have the confrontation.
The White House knows that if they push these buttons and they go after the press is going to react and respond, as you've seen tonight.
He seems to me to have had a tantrum.
He wants to act like a dictator.
He wants to act like a dictator. It's a street fight. He's just coming ready to brawl. The reporters, however, I mean, they're doing what they do best. They're acting professionally. In fact, that whole press conference, and I won't say all of them. I listened to most of it. There was actually a few good questions. But they get overshadowed because of all of these activists that have to stand up and preach and lecture. They're not even interested in asking a question. What kind of a question is, I'm here to confront you, basically. I'm here to stand up to you. He thought he acted professionally by saying, look, I'm here to challenge you. These are not reporters doing what they do best, or at least not in the best interest of the American people. They're fighting. They're fighting against this president and all of his supporters. And the reason they react the way that they do, first and foremost, is because they're being exposed. They hate being exposed. There was one interesting, really fascinating exchange here, and you'll hear it. And the president addresses, you know, the history with him sitting down with Vladimir Putin at Helsinki. He comes back, or rather even while it was happening. The press immediately was outraged. Brennan and some others were saying it was treasonous what he did. To go and talk, just to talk the way that he did at that press conference with Vladimir Putin. And so, you know the narrative. He's in cahoots with Putin. He's helping Vladimir Putin. And here in the conference, President Trump, he shines some light on the history that went on just routinely, before he ever came along. This is clip two.
Both. I actually had a very good meeting in Russia that you people didn't agree with, but that's okay. It doesn't much matter, obviously, because here
Helsinki.
I am. But the fact is that I had a very, very good meeting, a very, very good meeting with President Putin, and a lot was discussed about security, about Syria, about Ukraine. About the fact that President Obama allowed a very large part of Ukraine to be taken, and right now you have submarines off that particular parcel that we're talking about.
That was President Putin who annexed Crimea. Sir.
That was President Obama's regime. That was during President Obama, right? That was not during me.
But it was President.
No, that
Putin,
was President
sir, who did the
Obama.
Annexation.
No, it was President Obama that allowed it to happen. Had nothing to do with me.
Notice the reporter's knee-jerk reaction there. As soon as it gets close to Barack Obama, he's the savior, remember? As soon as it gets close to him, immediately they rise in defense of Barack Obama, even when Putin is on the march through a sovereign state, annexing Crimea, conquering the south part of Ukraine. And it all happened, all of it. It all, as did Syria, it all happened under Obama's watch. And the president points that out. They rush to the defense of Barack Obama and then attack. They go on the attack against this president because he exposes this blatant double standard. It makes me think of 2 Corinthians 11, where Paul said that there's all these false apostles. I mean, the reason this is fascinating to watch again, and maybe fascinating is not the best word, but we saw it happen in the church. this same kind of evil, this same kind of exposure. Paul said in 2 Corinthians, "For such are false apostles, deceitful workers, transforming themselves into apostles of Christ. And no marvel, for Satan himself is transformed into an angel of light." I mean, the devil sees himself as a perfect angel. The devil comes talking incessantly about love, about, well, I'm just doing my best. I'm just being very professional here. You're the one with all the problems. He comes along as if he's completely harmless. But he deceives people. And his ultimate goal is to destroy. Again, and no marvel, for Satan himself is transformed into an angel of light. Therefore, it is no great thing if his ministers also be transformed as ministers of righteousness. I mean, we shouldn't be shocked when Satan's ministers, and I use that term broadly, when they're out there transforming themselves into angels of light. In the Last Hour book, my father says there were people in John's day, this is what happened in the church during the first century, there were people in John's day saying they loved God and loved the church while they were destroying the church. It's so easy to get seduced by words. We want to think they love me and I love them, but they don't love God and they don't love you. They're talking about love while they fight against God, the God who is love. As I say, we've gone through this history before within spiritual Israel. These reporters, so many of them, they're deeply offended by the enemy of the state. And the president said it again yesterday in that press conference. He's not pulling back from that. He's saying, look, you're actually an enemy of the United States, because you're working to bring down. It's like I read in that previous quote from my father. They don't realize just how damaging and how dangerous this is. But it is some kind of sick and demented strategy to deceive and to destroy. He's out there, to his credit. I mean, it's 70 minutes of fireworks, the Q&A, I mean. But he's out there, he's accessible. He's more accessible than any president I can remember. I don't think President Obama did these things but a handful of times. He's out there, and even as the gaggle wears on, he asks, do you want me to stay longer? I'm happy to go. I don't want to overstay. This is what he said in the middle of the conference, clip 7.
Should we keep this going for a little while?
Yes,
I think you should keep this going.
You
know what?
When you get bored, would you please tell me? Seriously, tell me.
You're never bored.
I don't want to, hopefully not. I don't want to overstay, but...
So they like the fact that he's accessible. They like the fact that there's a lot of fireworks. I mean, deep down, they really like it. And he knows, he's been in TV before for years. In a lot of ways, he knows how the game is played. This was another interesting exchange where a reporter encouraged more of these opportunities. And then the president, he gets to the heart of why they want that. Clip 10.
First off, I personally think it's very good to have you here, because a free press and this type of engagement.
Actually, I do too.
Yes, it's vital to
democracy. It's called earned media. It's worth billions. Go ahead.
Earned media, he says. It's worth billions. Yet another astute comment. As I say, he knows. He knows how the business works. He's a television star himself. Fiery news conferences make for great ratings. Fox News, as far as I know, is still far and away the number one rated news network. But everyone's gotten a boost. CNN, MSNBC, CBS, NBC. All of them. They do hate being exposed. And so you see these kinds of sick and demented reactions. But they also love the ratings. The president said to Jim Acosta, look, you shouldn't even be working at CNN. Because you're this rude, because you're a bad person. And CNN rushes to his defense. As I say, he's given a hero's treatment on the network that night. A lot of them, they went from the White House room to the networks on live TV that night. They're treated like celebrities. And so these network presidents, whoever they are, they love it. Deep down, they love it. They know it's great for ratings. They know it's generating income. They know it's bringing in money, which exposes another, a very, very ugly trait of human nature. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Freedom is one of the most sought-after ideals in human history. Man's search for freedom has taken him into the fiercest of protests, struggles, revolutions, civil wars, and even world wars. Today, in the midst of free societies, many continue to fight for what they perceive as ever greater freedoms. And yet, many of these same people are actively fighting against law. Few people understand that this war against law actually undermines true freedom. To learn more, request Gerald Fleury's booklet, No Freedom Without Law. In this free booklet, you will see what the Bible says about the latter-day spirit of rebellion and lawlessness that is now so common in our nations today. Also request America Under Attack. In this booklet, you will learn more about the spirit behind this attack on law. You'll see where this is leading. Both booklets are offered freely at no cost or obligation to you. Request No Freedom Without Law and America Under Attack. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Fleury.
People leave. They come in, they're here. It's a very exhausting job. Although I love doing it, I must tell you, but it's exhausting for a lot of people. I'm surprised at a lot of people. They start off, they're young people, they're there for 2 years, and they're old by the time they leave. It's quite exhausting, but I love doing it, and
That's another tidbit there from the press conference yesterday. I mentioned the other day just how impressive it was to look at this man in his early 70s and the energy that he has in serving his country and others, and he's not putting them down, I don't think, but he's talking about others, young people coming on and working for a couple of years and then leaving much, much older. You think about, again, the extra help that this man undoubtedly has. We've talked before about Jeroboam, the temporary saving. There was this interesting exchange yesterday as well with a Jewish reporter. This is clip 5.
On the night of your victory, I asked you right after your speech to what you would attribute your victory. You pointed up to the ceiling and you said that it was God. Based off of that, how would you say over the last 2 years, God plays, what kind of a factor he plays in the day-to-day execution of the office of the president?
Well, God plays a big factor in my life.
That's President Trump responding, saying that after the reporter says, you told me in 2016 that it was God who gave you the victory. And he didn't have a whole lot more to say. it would have been interesting to hear him speak on for another minute or two on this, but he said God plays a big role in my life and in Vice President Pence's life. In that Saving America article from earlier this year, my father said, when you compare what this president is doing to what his predecessor did, there's been a clear change in direction, one that will slow the speed at which America is being pulled apart. And so in watching him fight back, as my father has also written, I mean, it is something to behold. These are stunning events that we're witnessing. Newt Gingrich, he had an article at Fox News, made some of the same points that we were making yesterday regarding the campaigns for Beto O'Rourke and Andrew Gillum in Florida. And Gingrich said in this piece that there wasn't a red wave, and there wasn't a blue wave either. If it was a blue wave, the Democrats would have gained control of the Senate. No red wave. Although, as the president noted, there were some victories that the Republicans were quite happy about. But Gingrich focuses in on the green wave. Just how much money was poured into these campaigns, particularly coming from rich billionaires funding Democrats because of their hatred for Donald Trump. Let me see if I can just pick it up here. The biggest change, Gingrich writes, in the election was the sheer volume of money generated by left-wing billionaires and activist groups who hate President Trump. It says, in congressional race after congressional race, Republicans suddenly found millions of dollars poured in against them on a scale that resembled Senate races in the past. I mean, it just keeps going up. Tens of billions of dollars. I mentioned the funding for O'Rourke. 70 to 80 million. It says, House Republicans had hurt themselves by allowing the number of House incumbent retirees to become larger than any time since 1930, when the Brookings Institution started tracking congressional retirements, breaking an 88-year record. So Gingrich talks about all the money that they were going against, and then he also mentions that 43 Republicans in the House retired, which left those seats open. And so it was two newcomers that fought over those seats. The incumbents, of course, usually they have a much stronger chance of keeping the seat than a newcomer does in winning it. And I think it was Rush Limbaugh yesterday who brought up an interesting point. 43, the president actually commented on this yesterday too. 43 Republicans retired. And Rush's theory is that a lot of them stepped down, a lot of them retired because they thought it was going to be a political bloodbath on Tuesday. We've been hearing for the past year about the blue wave. Oh, this is going to be an onslaught. Oh, everybody hates Donald Trump. This is going to be a record defeat. And so he suggests that some of them wanted to get out without even fighting. And maybe some of them too, themselves. There certainly is a small wing of the Republican Party that despises this president too. And maybe that factored in. But Gingrich says here, despite this institutional disadvantage, President Trump's House losses were far less than either the 54 seats President Clinton lost in 94 or the 63 seats President Obama lost in 2010. Measured against Clinton and Obama, you would have to give President Trump an A+ for keeping Republican House losses to a minimum and setting the stage for a Republican majority comeback in the 2020 presidential election. And then when he talks about the money, O'Rourke, Gillum, and then as you add to that, as I touched on yesterday, so many of these candidates, mostly senators, that the president did campaign for, they won. which shows that the real political force in the Republican Party is the president. It's something to behold. The Jeroboam end. I think he campaigned for 11 candidates for re-election, and 9 of them won. The New York Times had an op-ed by Daniel McCarthy. It says Republicans, well, it says some of the same facts as far as how many seats were lost compared to Obama and Clinton. And it says here, and while Democrats also lost Senate seats in the first midterm elections under Presidents Clinton and Obama, Mr. Trump's Republicans defied the historical trend by adding to their Senate majority. It says, if Mr. Trump were the abject failure that Democrats and some embittered former Republicans would like to believe, the Republicans should in fact have performed much worse on Tuesday, even with such a favorable economy. Indeed, if the administration were as incompetent and ideologically extreme as critics charge, the economy should not be doing well in the first place, some 22 months after Mr. Trump assumed office. How do you explain all of this? Well, as I say, when you look at all of these events through the lens of prophecy, those two articles I plugged yesterday, The Great Again booklet, America Under Attack. Well, speaking of those, in the Saving America piece, my father said God granted mercy when Israel really didn't deserve it. He's talking about the history with Jeroboam II. Rather than sending Israel into captivity at that time, God used this king to save Israel and to give them one more age of prosperity before Assyrian conquest. Now, you look into the prophecy in Amos 7, that Jeroboam end, and you also have a sobering warning. God says, I will not pass again. I will not again pass by them anymore. We've gone through that 78 Plain Truth article about that peaceful reign of Jeroboam II and how that so many in Israel anciently were lulled into a false sense of security. So we know where this is leading. The resurgence is not permanent. It's not permanent. And when you look at the forces that that are working against him, like are brought out in that Gingrich piece, again, you see Satan's fingerprints. He's not going to give up. He's not going to stop deceiving, dividing, and conquering. When we come back, we'll look at some of the lessons, some of the history coming out of World War I, history that should not be forgotten, but sadly, much of it is being either forgotten or revised. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. The developed nations have made awesome progress. They have produced a highly mechanized world, providing every luxury, modern convenience, and means of pleasure. Yet they are cursed with crime, violence, injustice, sickness and disease, broken homes and families. At the same time, more than one half the world is living in illiteracy, abject poverty, filth and squalor. Violence and destruction are rapidly multiplying. Many ask, why, if God exists, does he allow so much violence and human suffering? To understand the reason behind this astonishing paradox, request a complimentary copy of Mystery of the Ages. We were born into this 20th century world as it is. We take it for granted, but we can't explain it. It's like viewing a movie at a point already near the end. We see what is occurring at that point, but not having seen it from the beginning and not knowing how events developed to the point of viewing, we simply cannot understand what we are seeing. Mystery of the Ages transports you back to the beginning of the movie, to the foundation of this present evil world. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com. This is KPCG-FM, and this is The Trumpet Daily.
We are a hot country. This is a hot White House. We are a White House that people want to work with.
Another comment there from the contentious press conference yesterday. And that, too, statements like that, it drives them crazy. Hot country. They've been educated to believe that everything wrong in the world is because of America. All right, well, maybe the economy's doing well, but look, we have a lot of faults. There's a lot of evil here. It's America that oppresses other nations. It's America where you have institutionalized racism. That's what we've been told in the universities. That's what Barack Obama preached. Who do you think you are to come along talking about the nation being a nationalist, putting America first, even ahead of others abroad? They despise that kind of thinking. And what's really amazing about all of this is that, and we've made this point before, but you look at America's traditional enemies. You take Germany, for example, and the scholars and the academics and the media types over there, they're revising the history as well. They're scrubbing some of the atrocities right off the record, or at least the blame. Germany, during World War I, it wasn't so bad after all. I mean, we were kind of provoked. The German Empire was a good thing. We need to rebuild it. Here we are at the 100-year anniversary since World War I. The Great War ended November 11th, 1918. The armistice was signed, and then I guess it was a year after that, the Treaty of Versailles, which many historians today now, I mean, they're looking at that history as, well, in similar ways that Adolf Hitler looked at it. It was unjust. It was oppressive. We were treated unfairly. You want to look for language that sounds like Adolf Hitler. Maybe for one second you can stop looking at the White House and look at what some academics and historians in Germany or in Europe are saying. Was Germany treated unfairly in World War I? That's what this new magazine feature, Compact Magazine, commemorating the 100th anniversary of the end of World War I. This magazine's devoting a special issue to the shame of Versailles. How the victorious powers enslaved Germany. In the online version of the article, the title is Germany in Chains. The German Empire was a good thing. Germany was unfairly squashed by the Allies after World War I. This article says, beware history falsification. Through the state-sponsored newspapers and television, we are exposed to a barrage of opinion. Everything German and national is portrayed as evil. And our more than 1,000 years of history are compressed to the Dark Ages of 1933 to 1945. Okay, so it was bad during Hitler's reign, but that was an aberration. That certainly was not an extension of an empire that was in any way evil. That was an aberration. And oh, just so you know, it was an aberration brought on by the United States. The article says, The chapter from Versailles to Hitler proves how Wall Street created ideal economic conditions in order to cultivate national socialism. They're commenting on a book that has this same kind of nonsense. American financial capital enslaved Germany and promoted the dictator. So you see, Hitler and the Nazis, they were just an aberration created by the United States. The United States is responsible for that monster. We need to have a completely different view of this history, they're saying. And this is not uncommon. This is not unusual in today's world. Agency France Press, this is their article about that new issue of Compact Magazine. This French outlet says, public interest in the origins of the First World War was revived with the 2013 release of the bestseller, The Sleepwalkers, How Europe Went to War in 1914. It's by an Australian historian named Christopher Clark. It says, this is the Agency France press piece, rather than just blame Germany and the Austro-Hungarian Empire, Clark argues that other European powers shared an imperialistic paranoia and, without intending to, sleepwalked into the first industrial-scale war. It just kind of happened. And again, this is important to expose because this was going on in the worldwide Church of God, like my father brings out in Daniel Unsealed at Last. Remember what they said about, well, this event happened and it just sort of exploded into our faces. No one's really to blame. They don't assign the blame. It says the success of the book among German readers betrayed a deep-rooted need to free themselves from blame and guilt, said the conservative daily Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung. The AFD's Bavaria chapter has promoted Clark's tome on its website. Christopher Clark, this Australian, who's looking at this history saying it wasn't Germany's fault, it wasn't Austria's fault, it really wasn't anybody's fault. This French article says, while Germany has gone to great lengths to remember and atone for World War II, Nazi atrocities and the Holocaust, remembrance of the First World War is far more low-key. And so this AFP article, it contrasts that book, Clark's book in 2013, this book that, as the article itself says, I mean, it's changed public perception on this history. This AFP article, it contrasts the book from 2013 with another one by Fritz Fischer. This one was published in the 1960s. And Fischer, a German, said that Germany had a substantial share of the historical responsibility for the outbreak of the general war. Germany's responsible, in other words. He talked in his book, this is the one from the 60s, how that German elites working behind the scenes orchestrated Hitler's rise to power and that it was just an extension of the struggle leading up to and during World War I. And you go back to even Winston Churchill. I mean, Churchill saw that as the same thing. It was round two. Mr. Armstrong, Herbert Armstrong, used to talk about round three. We bring this out in much of our literature as well. Fisher's book comes out in the 1960s, and it says here, well, it continues on from this article. During this debate, it's talking about a debate between German historians following Fischer's book coming out in the early 60s. AFP says, during this debate, the essentials of the case for German war guilt were established beyond doubt and in time accepted even by most of his critics. That's actually a quote from Paul Johnson. Because of Fischer's work, it is impossible to maintain that World War I was all a ghastly mistake, unintended by any of the parties. That, according to another historian. The Encyclopedia of Historians and Historical Writings called Fischer arguably the most important German historian of the 20th century, saying that his findings have stood the test of time and succeeded in showing that both the Kaiserreich and the Third Reich were dominated by capitalist elites who shared the same anti-Western, racist, and imperialistic consciousness. It wasn't that long ago when the scholars would look at Fischer's work and say, that's the definitive history right there. That's the truth. These were the causes. But now, I mean, we're much more sophisticated. We're living in a modern era. We've turned up a lot of new sources. And we're retelling that history. And Christopher, whatever his name is, I've passed it on my notes, the one who authored Sleepwalkers, he comes along in 2013, Christopher Clark, with his version, and it is widely praised. It's a masterpiece, says the New York Times. The best book I've read this year, or indeed for several years. That's from the New Statesman. Niall Ferguson, great historian. Many see him as a great historian today. He said, it's hard to believe we will ever see a better narrative of what was perhaps the biggest collective blunder in the history of international relations. That's all that it was, just a big blunder. All of these powerful nations just sleepwalking their way into it. The Daily Mail says the arguments Clark sets out in this quite superb account of the causes of the First World War are so compelling that they effectively consign the old historical consensus to the bin. No one's to blame. If anything, the Western nations were too hard on Germany. The Sunday Times, one of the most impressive and stimulating studies of the period ever published. Also from the Sunday Times, impeccably researched, provocatively argued, and elegantly written. For Clark, the statesmen of 1914 were sleepwalkers, watchful but unseeing, haunted by dreams, yet blind to the reality of the horror they were about to bring into the world. Everyone, you see, was to blame. One other reviewer said, there will be many books on the First World War as the 100th anniversary draws near, but few as illuminating as this one. Well, for a different view, look at the trumpet.com, August 2014, the Trumpet magazine, actually, August 2014, Richard Palmer, writing about the war over World War I. And he too contrasts these two works. Christopher Clark's book from 2013 and the one by Fischer from the early 1960s. I don't have the time to go through too much of it here. But Richard says here, given all this praise, you would have thought that Clark has comprehensively demolished Fischer's ideas, but he has not. His book does not even confront them. Clark completely ignores Fischer's most damning evidence. On the rare occasions that Clark does acknowledge another point of view, he often ignores the most convincing proofs that support it. Instead, he tears into secondary pieces of evidence of little importance while giving his reader the impression that they are the foundation of his opponent's opinions, and that he has destroyed them. Oh, we've just demolished these older works of history, and we have a new story to tell, and it's quite different. The world stumbled into World War I, and then for whatever reason, they really corrected Germany harshly afterward, and no wonder Hitler came along. Who is behind this kind of thinking? Who is behind this kind of historical revisionism? We see it happening in the United States. We see it happening in Germany. And they're working in two different directions, if you get what I mean. What an important lesson. Brad McDonald, he had another article, 2009, is the German media promoting Nazi propaganda? He said, some German media outlets are talking about the Treaty of Versailles in the same way a certain Austrian-born rising political star did in the 1930s. Let's talk for a moment about those who are talking like Adolf Hitler, who refer to the Treaty of Versailles in the same way that Adolf Hitler did. If Hitler is on the brain, this might be a story that some in the media would go looking for. But no, they're obsessed. There's a sickness, as I said in the first segment. There's a built-in hostility that's there in the U.S. media. And so this gets completely overlooked. And in fact, there's a lot of sleepwalking going on into World War III. And there will be a nation to blame for triggering it, but for being caught completely unawares ourselves, we're going to have ourselves to blame for sure. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, I wish I had more time. I have more material, but we'll save it for another day. Send your emails to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.